Every year at Martin Luther King Day weekend, I try to brush up on Martin Luther King. And usually it's through the I Have the Dream speech or the speech he made in Selma where they marched across the bridge, which is very inspiring to me. But I stumbled upon a reference that Martin Luther King actually used this scripture in Nicodemus in one of his speeches, but it was an hour-long speech. Most of it was about details. Details. It was a January speech, and he was detailing everything, well, not almost everything, perhaps, that had been done by his movement in the past decade. Operation Breadbasket, anti-poverty measures, integration in schools, entrepreneurship, Black-owned businesses. We still hear about this stuff today. And I remarked to myself, thinking how much of a complete leader he was. And he entitled the speech, "Where Do We Go From Here? Where Do We Go From Here?" No doubt Jesus was a complete leader as well, who not only could inspire people with words and rhetoric, and a vision for the future, like Martin Luther King did in that model, but also organize. It was a quite impressive list of things that he listed off. Efforts in Chicago, in Cleveland, in Georgia, all over the country. Perhaps this is why Nicodemus came to Jesus, because he was impressive. And he says, "We, no doubt, you are a man from God," he says, "we know," him being a Pharisee. Pharisees like to talk about him behind his back. We see that many times in scriptures. No doubt, Nicodemus' curiosity was sparked. Perhaps he had heard rumors and stories about what Jesus had done that's so far not been a part of our gospel in John. But for whatever reason, Nicodemus comes here to Jesus at nighttime. Now, the commentaries that I've read before are all critical of Nicodemus, saying that he came at night because he didn't want to be seen coming to Jesus during the day, and that may be so. He, after all, is supposed to be a religious leader and teacher, yet here he is going to a peasant preacher from Galilee for advice, for wisdom. Didn't want to be seen giving legitimacy to Jesus' movement, because after all, the Pharisees were against it for the most part. We know that Nicodemus is an educated man to get in his position. We know that he is a man in the second half of life. We talked last week about the two halves of life, how the first half of life we spend building a foundation for the future, a container, working on ourselves. And this is a good thing. It's by design in life. It's probably almost always been that way. And yet, what do we do with the second half of life? Here's a man who is clearly in the second half of life. He is a made man. He's educated. He's got a position of power. Presumably, I've always thought of Nicodemus as a man who's older, wise, because he's a Pharisee, he's an elder, he's a part of the ruling council. But when I looked up more about Nicodemus this week and read more about him, scholars believe that he was born in the year 1 BC, which means that he's only a little bit older than Jesus. Yet how much different is he than Jesus? He comes from a different attitude, a different school of thought. Not to pick on him too badly, but perhaps it is rigid. Perhaps it's too much about the law. Perhaps it's too literal. It's too black and white. How can I be born again? How can I enter my mother's womb? Jesus, on the other hand, is trying to get him to expand his thinking. And he approaches it from an intellectual standpoint, but then gives him so much more, gives him spiritual food as well. And then we do not see what happens to Nicodemus. We don't have any other response from Nicodemus after this initial almost question. Nicodemus wants to kind of ease into the conversation. We know that you're a man of God by what you do. And Jesus sees right through perhaps a ruse that gets to the heart of the matter. You must be born again, or rather, as some translations say, perhaps more accurately, born from above. Born from above. I like that. Because after all, do we really want what we've had before? Born again? Do we want to be born into what we know? Or would we rather be born from above? We throw that phrase around, born again, like it's some sort of one-time event that happens to you. Or something that you pray for. You're born again, but then what? Then what? Where do you go from there? Perhaps we need to consider this a little bit differently, that it is an ongoing process. We have a lot in common with Nicodemus, I think. And I've said the same of Thomas. Thomas, who was perhaps an intellectual of the group of disciples. Nicodemus, someone in the second half of life, someone who's steeped in religion. All of us here have been attending church for a great deal of time, most of us. I have since as long as I can remember. I've got lots to learn. And more to be born into from above. I would hope we would all be able to have the humility to admit that. Perhaps it took Nicodemus a while for it to soak in. He's a character that we see two other times in the gospel, or that we hear from, or that's mentioned. One is in John 7, and the Sanhedrin and the Pharisees are talking about Jesus. And Nicodemus comes to his defense. Perhaps this conversation at nighttime had time to soak in a little bit. And then when Jesus had been crucified, guess who's there in John 19? Nicodemus. Many scholars believe that Nicodemus became a follower of Christ, that perhaps maybe in secret, maybe not so much in secret, since he was there with Joseph of Arimathea at the end helping to bury Jesus' body, became a disciple of Jesus, became a part of the movement, was born again and born from above. How did he move forward from that night? How did he move forward from the crucifixion? How did he move forward with the disciples? Did he hang up his Pharisee robes? Did he put on his sandals and take the road with the rest of the disciples? We don't know. Martin Luther King spoke of all these things that they had done together. And yet he was asking, where do we go from here? What possibly could we do? I would hope that the dream continues on. How do we? Looking back in 2017 and before that 2016, we have a list of things that we have done. Kitchen, organ, pavilion, new TV screens, a website that's been updated, new worship times. Started a VBS. Where do we go from here? What can we do? What possible things does God have in store for us? What are our concrete plans for the future? In the newsletter, I propose that we perhaps think of doing a little bit less and focus more on what we do, to put more into it, to put more effort and attention and, dare I suggest, spirit into our efforts. Where do we get our spiritual energy? Where do we get our mojo? Is it just here on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m.? Do you whistle a tune in the shower? Do you sing along in the car on your commute to work? Do you meditate at home? Do you begin your day or end your day in prayer? We need more spiritual nourishment in what we do, I believe. Our procedures are not just procedures. It is nothing without prayer. 1 Corinthians 13, if we have not love, we are just noisy gongs. We'll have a lot of procedures next week at our annual meeting. There's a lot of numbers. There's a lot of pages in our reports. There's lots to read. There's lots to consider. Don't get lost in all of that and forget about the spiritual nourishment that we need to keep going. This second half of life things. What's the way forward? The way forward is the Spirit. Spirit. It's not all our fault. Institutions are not designed primarily to be places that facilitate spiritual things. We have to guard against that. Just because we have the name of a church on our doors doesn't mean that we always remember that. In our rehearsals, we have a lot of spirit. We have a lot of fun. We have a lot of fellowship. Why not in our elder meetings? Why not in our consistory meetings? If we don't, we should question it. We should scratch our heads and say, what are we doing? What's the purpose here? We need to get beyond just numbers. We need to infuse everything that we do with more soul. This week, challenge yourself. This year, challenge yourself to become soulful people, to get filled up. To not just worry about the vessel and the details and the foundation. You have great foundations. You have made wise decisions in life. Fill your lives with more soul. Let's fill this church with more soul, with more spirit, with more energy, with more singing. And every task that we take, and every meal that we plan, even in solemn occasions like funerals, more spirit. In every team that we are involved in, scholarship committee, endowment committee, deacons, elders, the trustees who deal with the building. Pray when you're doing those things. Be joyful. This is the way forward. This is where we go from here. This is our mission. Let us stand and sing in praise to God.